From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. E-bikes are becoming increasingly common on Charlotte streets, and as more of them take to the road, accidents and injuries are on the rise. In 2024, more than 59,000 injuries were associated with e-bikes nationwide, and now Charlotte City Council will take a closer look. This month, they'll examine the safety concerns these bikes create. They're heavier and faster than regular bikes, and quite often, inexperienced young people are using them. So what regulations are in place? What new regulations could help curb the accident rate for riders and pedestrians? We hear about that and speak with a doctor about the injuries he sees and also about helmet safety this hour on Charlotte Talks. First, the news. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. E-bikes are becoming more common on Charlotte streets and sidewalks, and as their popularity rises, concerns are also rising about safety. Last year, people took about 150 million trips on e-bikes and e-scooters nationwide. Just the year before, in 2024, e-bikes were associated with over 59,000 emergency department visits in the United States, which is why on Monday, Charlotte City Council's Safety Committee took up the topic. Dante Anderson chairs that committee.
I receive plenty of emails regarding this topic, and there's just an anticipation from some community members that it's just a matter of time before a young person in particular gets hurt.
The concerns revolve around the weight and speed of these vehicles, the lack of regulation, the judgment of some of their younger riders. And one more thing.
It's been my experience that parents don't have that understanding that what they're purchasing for their children is actually a motorbike and not an electric bike.
Wait, there's more than one type of motorized bicycle? Yes, and their capabilities vary widely. Today, a closer look at those motorized bicycles, the rules governing them, and the concerns floating around them. Kimberly Owens is a Charlotte City Council member representing District 6. While she is not on the Safety Committee, she is hearing an increasing number of concerns about these vehicles from constituents and was in attendance at Monday's committee meeting. She's here along with Chris Dyes, an avid cyclist and co-owner of Charlotte Cycles, and Dr. Mark Levy is with us. He's a pediatric trauma surgeon at Orlando Health Arnold Palmer Hospital for Children. Welcome to all three of you. Thank you for joining us this morning. Kimberly, I'm going to start with you. Good morning. I'm going to start with you. And although, as I said, you're not on the Safety Committee, you seem to have taken a lead on this issue of e-bikes. Is that strictly because of the concerns that you're hearing from District 6 constituents?
Well, it definitely was a motivator. I have often said that the thing that I hear most about since I've been on council, either if it's in person when I have one of my morning coffees or if it's via email, is e-bikes and concerns about them throughout the district. I also had the opportunity, my niece lives in Colorado, and she was hit by an e-bike and her arm was broken. And it really soured the whole summer, but it did focus my mind a bit on how children can hurt other children very easily just doing the things they love during the summer.
Yeah, you have said that these complaints are constant from constituents. What specifically? Give me some examples of what they're expressing to you.
So, 9 times out of 10, it's somebody who's coming to me who is very worried about the interaction with traffic and that they're going to inadvertently kill or injure a child. And obviously nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants the weight of that upon them. You know, the other folks are folks who walk on our sidewalks and are feeling overwhelmed at the speed at which people are going by them, the lack of real consideration.
I'm going to talk a little bit about regulations, et cetera, but it was my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that you can't ride a bicycle on a sidewalk. So if that is true, why would you be able to ride a e-bike on a sidewalk?
I can't speak to what is going through people's minds in terms of their appreciation of the law. What I can speak to, though, is that it is fallout, I think, from feeling as though the roads are not safe. I don't think anyone is going on the sidewalk intending to menace pedestrians. I think people go on the sidewalk because they feel safer there than they do on our roads. And that's a Charlotte issue.
So I gave out statistics at the top of the program, 150 million trips taken last year by individuals on e-bikes and e-scooters. And these are personally owned, and they're also the kinds of e-bikes and e-scooters that we allow to be rented in Charlotte and you see on the streets all the time. And over 59,000 emergency department visits as the results of accidents associated with those vehicles. Those are national figures. Do we have any local figures?
I've asked for local figures. I'm sure Sustain Charlotte and some of the groups likely keep a better tab on that. I think some of the inability to really point to valid statistics is the issue that you addressed at the top of the hour, which is there are so many different types of e-bikes that even our police reports, when someone gets into an accident, oftentimes that police report, you really have to dig into the narrative to even discern whether it was an electric assist bike or what sort of bike it was. And so that is not really a valid indicator of the frequency of some of these interactions.
And in fact, WFAE asked CMPD for data showing how often e-bikes are involved in crashes, and it turns out they don't really track this data, should they?
I'd like to see them track it, but I think we have to work with them. I think you heard some of my questions at the safety committee of CMPD. I believe, we need to be a little bit more sophisticated in terms of the tools that we give our police officers because there are myriad, we've got e-scooters, we've got skateboards, we've got a variety of electric devices, and their paperwork and their computer programs just really don't capture that degree of reporting. And I think they should.
As we heard a moment ago from City Council Safety Committee Chair Dante Anderson, there is some confusion about these vehicles, but she was quick to point out that all these bikes are not created equal.
This conversation is not to attack an electric bike specifically, but really to address the modified bikes that we're seeing and the moto bikes that we're seeing, in particular, young people riding without any protective measures in traffic, doing wheelies and things of that nature on the streets that I see all the time.
And CMPD Captain Jeremiah Blow spoke on Monday about what he and CMPD have been dealing with.
Most of the ones we encounter in the uptown, they're referred to as e-bikes, but they're motorcycles. There's no pedals, there's no part of it that's a bicycle. 2 weekends ago, we got a 12-year-old at 1 a.m. on one of these. We called his parents, and they're like, well, he's just on his e-bike. So there's just a lot of confusion among everybody. Everybody uses that term e-bike, but they're really just motorcycles flying up and down the streets.
Of course, a 12-year-old on a bike at 1 a.m. is another topic altogether. So let's get some definitions. Chris, you are a cyclist. You're the co-owner of Charlotte Cycles. You sell
Yes.
these bikes. So tell
Yeah, we
us,
do.
what should we think of when I say e-bikes? What should come to mind?
Well, the e-bikes we sell at Charlotte Cycles are class 1, 2, and 3 bikes. Class 1 bikes are 20 miles per hour, no throttle. Class 2 is 20 miles per hour with the throttle, and class 3 is 28 miles per hour, no throttle.
Okay, stop right there. Stop right there. Let's start with class 1. Class 1 is an electric bike with pedal assist, meaning you ride the. Is that a more accurate description? Is it pedal assist or is it electric assist to the
It's
pedaling?
the bikes we sell are definitely pedal assist. There's a lot of gray areas with bikes that are more e-mopeds, e-dirt bikes, but the bikes we sell at Charlotte Cycles are class bikes.
Okay, so class 1 is it has pedals, it also has a
Has pedals.
motor. The
Yes.
class 2 has a throttle. What does
Yes.
that mean?
So it's not like a throttle used on a car or a motorcycle. It is used meant to be used 10 to 20% of the time. It's meant to help get you through an intersection or help boost you up a hill. It's not something you just ride on like e-mopeds and e-dirt bikes.
So a type one, why would you buy a type one bike as opposed to a 10 speed?
Well, a class one bike is pretty standard. I'd say about 80% of the bikes we sell are some sort of a class one bike. people like the 20 miles per hour. Not everyone needs a class three that does 28 miles per hour. And typically the 28 mile per hour bikes are more expensive as well. So it just depends on what your need is and where you're actually riding.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to type three. That's type three that gets up to 28 miles per hour. It's the fastest, as I understand, legal bike available.
Yes.
Why are these bikes becoming so popular?
It's a good way to get around through town. My sister lives in Plaza Midwood, and she takes her bike, her e-bike, into Charlotte, and she gets to the office faster on her e-bike than she does in her car. It's just a wonderful way to get around the city.
Is that because you can avoid the traffic jams that cars have to contend with? I mean, don't you have to still abide by the rules of the road?
And abide by the rules of the law, stop signs, all that. Yes.
There are, as I understand it, age restrictions on type 3 bikes. These are the bikes that, with assisted pedaling, you can reach a speed of 28 miles per hour. But none of these bikes, type 1, type 2, type 3, none of them require a driver's license.
No,
28
they
miles
do not.
Per hour is pretty, 28 miles per hour in traffic is pretty quick. Because sometimes traffic is going slower. So shouldn't they require a driver's license?
Right now they don't. We're kind of indifferent on it because 28 miles per hour does make it easier in and out of traffic. You can move faster, so you can respond quicker in traffic. Not necessarily a speed you would want to do on a greenway. But that being said, the greenways in Charlotte are limited to 15 miles per hour. And when I sell an e-bike, I show the customers how to limit their bike to 15 miles per hour if they're going to be riding on the greenway. So you could set a speed limit.
Who's buying these bikes? Is it young people? Is it parents for young people? Is it parents who just want to have their own bicycles so that they can tool around? Now, who's buying these bikes?
Everyone. All of the above. Yeah.
And
it's
Go ahead.
No.
Well, when a child asks mommy or daddy for one of these bikes, they probably want the fastest bike available. What advice do you have to give parents? Because I understand that parents.
Yeah, we explain to parents the different classes and what their mission is. And obviously, a lot of parents don't feel the need for their kid to do 28 miles per hour, so they stick to a class one or two. Very rarely do we sell a class three to a young adult. That's more like your commuter that's in and out of traffic.
But anybody can ride these bikes. Class one, type two, type three. Anybody of any age can own these bikes and use these bikes in and out of traffic, on city streets, on sidewalks, etc.
Yes.
Is any training required for any of this? Any understanding of traffic laws, etc.?
Currently, there is not. No, it's kind of there isn't any training. Like when we sell a bikes, we spend time with the customer. We educate them about the different classes, how to operate the bike, where to safely operate the bike. But in terms of formal training, there currently isn't any.
And these are the legal bikes. You only sell the legal bikes.
Yes.
Type 1, type 2, type 3. But there are illegal bikes that go up to 50 miles per hour, some of
them. And faster.
I'm curious where people are buying those.
Mostly what we see a lot of is online purchases where it's a fly-by-night e-bike company. They're really attracted by the cheap price, $600 to $800. I saw one that was dual motors. It had a motor on the front and rear of the bike, and it had 2,000 watt motors and a 2,000 watt hour battery. For all intents and purposes, that is an e-motorcycle. That is a very fast machine, and they can be purchased online relatively inexpensive.
So I have about 30 seconds left. Are the rental e-bikes that we have seen for years now in Charlotte and the rental e-scooters that we've seen for years, would they be comparable to any of the bikes that you sell? And which type would they be comparable to?
I believe the scooters I couldn't speak on, but the rental e-bikes, I believe, are class one or two, if I'm not mistaken. I believe the ones in Charlotte are one or two.
Okay. There are other things that you have to sell to these people who buy these, and that's helmets. We're going to talk about helmets and what
Yes.
kinds of helmets are needed. And when we come back, I want Dr. Mark Levy to join this conversation. He's a pediatric trauma surgeon who has dealt with a lot of the results of these bikes being in accidents and what he's seeing in the emergency room. We're talking about e-bikes this morning. Kimberly Owens is with us from Charlotte City Council. Chris Dees, or Dies rather, from Charlotte Cycles, and Dr. Mark Levy.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and United Way of Greater Charlotte. Celebrating 95 years, United Way of Greater Charlotte supports education, financial stability, health, and essential services. Details at UnitedWayGreaterCLT.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the proliferation of e-bikes here and around the country. These are electronically assisted bicycles that people are buying and scooters that people are using. We have our own rental e-scooters and e-bike system here in Charlotte. These are individually owned, and they've come to the attention of the Charlotte City Council Safety Committee because there are very few regulations governing these, and people are misusing and hurting themselves and others in the process. Kimberly Owens is on City Council District 6. She's with us this morning along with Chris Dies, who sells these vehicles at Charlotte Cycles. And Dr. Mark Levy will join us in just a moment. He's a pediatric trauma surgeon. We're going to talk about some of the injuries that these bicycles can sometimes result in. We talked a moment ago, Chris, very briefly about illegal bikes. You do not
Yes.
sell these. Most legitimate dealers don't, but they are being bought by people online and elsewhere. Do people know when they're buying these illegal bikes that they're buying an illegal bike?
Most times they do not. They don't know until they bring it in to us and we're like, this is not an e-bicycle. We try to educate people as we go. But no, a lot of times they have no idea. They just think it's an e-bike.
And he talked, Kimberly, a moment ago, Chris talked about educating the buyers of these bicycles about the rules of the road and how they should use them. But just ordinary bicyclists, I see them breaking the law all the time, running through stop signs, riding three abreast on a road that has a bike lane, and yet you can't get around them because there are two or three of them taking up the road space. Clearly, they don't understand the rules of the road. And when you put a motor on a bicycle like this, what do you hope for in terms of better regulation?
So, you know, I start with the premise that is it really a regulatory issue, or is regulation a component of the solution? So we've got to have, I believe, education. We've got enforcement that we appreciate that our CMPD is pulled in myriad directions and is possibly not able to prioritize the things in the moment that we wish for them to all the time. But then we've also got engineering. Do we need a more fulsome and wider bike lane system in Charlotte? Does that need to have some more protected barriers so that people do feel more confident and comfortable riding there and you know, are not feeling as though they have to go onto our sidewalks? So I think it's all three components. You know, what sort of regulation do we need to have? Well, you know, a lot of that is going to be limited by education.
Dr. Mark Levy's with us. He's a pediatric trauma surgeon at Orlando Held Arnold Palmer Hospital for Children. It's a level one trauma center. You say that you have witnessed a 250% increase in injuries related to e-bikes. And I think that was a couple of years ago. I grew up at a time when kids did not wear helmets to roller skate or ride bicycles, etc. We just went out and did it. Now most kids do wear helmets. When it comes to e-bikes and e-scooters, which are limited to 15 miles per hour, if you wear a helmet, are these vehicles any more dangerous for kids than regular bicycles?
I think they are more dangerous for a couple of reasons. And the 15 mile an hour limit, I think, is probably the slower ones. Most kids have ones that are probably faster, at least here in Orlando. And the weight of the bikes is also important. They weigh quite a bit more than a regular bicycle. And so the momentum you have when you hit something or while being hit is much greater than you have if you have just a regular bicycle.
So nationwide, the largest number of injuries resulting from e-bikes are among males, and usually among children and adolescent males. Is that your experience in Orlando?
Yes, we're really seeing kind of the same pattern. I'd say the girls don't necessarily ride e-bikes as much as you see boys riding them. And so we see a lot of injuries, mainly in the male population.
So as a pediatric trauma surgeon, what kind of injuries are you seeing as the result of these, of accidents with these vehicles?
So kind of the big things we see are head injuries related to them, some severe, some maybe not so severe, depending on helmet use, as well as facial fractures, and then extremity fractures, like upper extremity, like arm injuries or broken arms, broken legs, things like that.
What about pedestrians who are interacting with these in an accident situation?
Yeah, I think you spoke to that exactly, where kids riding on sidewalks hit other people. And we've had that happen before. We just had a patient actually just like that this past week, who was hit by someone riding an e-bike and had a head injury and had an extremity fracture as well.
So I read yesterday, and I'm not sure where I read it, that the riders of e-scooters who have accidents generally have a greater number of head injuries than riders of e-bikes, whose injuries are generally lower in the body and are associated more with bone fractures and things like that. Has that been your experience?
I think that's the general consensus across the country based on just data that's been collected. For us, it's a lot of our injuries are mainly by e-bikes rather than e-scooters. And I'd say the e-scooters are limited to maybe the little bit older population when they ride them downtown for, you know, when they get the rental ones and they're drinking at night and so forth. So those end up going to the adult trauma center, which is across the street from us.
I see motorcyclists on the interstate wearing shorts and t-shirts all the time. And that just strikes me as being extremely risky, because if you have an accident, you're going to tear that skin and muscle off your bones really quickly at 65 miles an hour or faster. At what speed, since these e-bikes can go up to, the legal ones can go up to 28 miles per hour and the illegal ones go up much faster, at what speed should you really be wearing long sleeves and long pants to protect yourself from injury?
That's a good question. I don't have a definite answer for that. I know motorcycle riders, if you ever take a motorcycle riding course, one of the things they talk about is you're always wearing long pants, jeans, and a long sleeve shirt or something leather to protect you. Mm-hmm. Based on the speed. There's nothing that I know of that is recommended that says, oh, at this speed, you should be wearing long pants, long sleeve shirt. Certainly the injuries are worse the faster you go, and the road rash you get related to it is definitely related to some of that.
You may have just answered my next question, because Truveda, which is a health data company that aggregates electronic health records from U.S. health systems around the country, grouped injuries into body regions, injuries from these vehicles into body regions. Most were in the upper body, including the head and neck, but the lower body was certainly not immune. And they categorized those injuries in every category, from superficial to fractures to traumatic brain injuries and internal organ injuries. Would any of these injuries be more serious on an e-bike, a legal e-bike, than they would be on a regular bicycle?
Well, I think when we talk about the speed, I think it's the main thing. And I think when we talk about the 10 to 15 mile an hour e-bikes, I mean, what we see here, I think, is much faster, is the 20 to 28 mile an hour ones. And based on that speed, I think we see injuries that are much worse.
Since your entire body is exposed while riding a bicycle of any kind, whether it's electronically powered or pedal powered, why do head and neck injuries account for the largest number of those injuries? And are you finding that to be the case in your practice?
So we do see quite a bit of head injuries and facial fractures. Maybe not so many, as many neck injuries as others may have seen. I think part of it is helmet use. You talk about like people using helmets. Most of the time when I see kids with e-bikes, not all the time, but some of the times, they have them, the helmet on the handlebar, they have them on their backpack, they have them anywhere but on their head. And so that's one of the problems. The other problem is the faster they go, then it becomes the issue of what type of helmet do you use? And there are classes of helmets that go up from the bicycle class of helmet. There's class one, class two, class three, and it goes up. But as you increase in classes, then you end up with one that has actually facial protection, like they have kids who ride motocross bikes and things like that. And that I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing more facial fractures, is because of that lack of protection from that.
Chris, NPR reported a couple of years ago in 2024 that helmet use was decreasing 5.6% every year. You're in the business when you sell a bike, whether it's a pedal bike or whether it's an e-bike, do people generally purchase a helmet to go along with it?
9 times out of 10, yes. There's still the older generation, and even I'm a part of that, where we grew up not wearing helmets,
right,
and skiing, bicycling, all that. But a lot of people buy a helmet when they purchase an e-bike. 9 out of 10.
Buying the right kind of helmet? I'm sure that you try to steer them to the right helmet for the bicycle they're buying. But I would imagine that the more protective helmets are the more expensive helmets. Do you get friction or resistance to that? In other words, are looking at you as upselling them?
A little bit, but then a lot of customers eventually wise up and understand it's their head and don't skimp on a helmet. It's the one thing that can immediately make you safer.
Kimberly, are there laws or municipal regulations requiring bicyclists or riders of e-bikes or e-scooters to wear helmets?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do not know the answer to that. I'm assuming Chris may know. I know with motorcycles that we've had some uptake of legislation that mandates helmet wearing. And I know that there is opposition to that from people, such as my father, who was a devout motorcycle rider and thought that it was overreach by the government to tell him to put on a helmet. So I'm assuming that there's similar patterns of compliance and non-compliance. Chris, do you know if we have a mandate?
It was a slide you guys put up yesterday at the meeting, okay. But it says 16 years and younger has to wear a helmet.
Okay, so it's age restricted.
It's age restricted, yeah.
We have this conversation about governmental overreach when it comes to seatbelts. We've had it when it's come to wearing masks in public during the COVID pandemic, Doctor. And that leads us to this question, because it seems to be we're moving toward a time in this country when it's about me, not about anybody else. It's about me and my rights. Your rights be damned, as long as I have my rights. Only about 44% of injured e-bike riders were found to be wearing helmets at the time of the accident. And another pediatric surgeon, Dr. Laura Goodman at the Children's Hospital of Orange County, calls this a really significant public health problem. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think the use of these e-bikes and e-scooters, or they call them micro-mobility vehicles, has become much more common. And the number that is growing, I say it's doubling every year here. Some places are getting even more than that and becoming almost like a ubiquitous problem with this. And it's not something that we have a real handle on. This is something that the American College of Surgeons Committee on Trauma is looking into pretty significantly, based on there really is no good answer. It's a multifaceted problem that involves not following traffic safety patterns, not wearing helmets, speeds that are too fast, riding on streets, riding on sidewalks. There's not really even a place that you can ride them. There's not a designated place for that type of vehicle.
During COVID, we were encouraged to wear masks, whether you politically believe that or being accurate or not, to not just to protect ourselves, but to protect others around us. And the same is true of vaccines. You get the measles vaccine to protect your child, but also to protect other children who may not be able to be immunized because of an underlying condition. And people don't seem to care about that anymore. It's all about me. What makes this a public health issue? If I don't wear a helmet and I have an accident and I have a traumatic brain injury, who am I hurting other than myself?
Well, you're hurting the whole entire medical system. because it puts a burden on that. And then the long-term injuries related to long-term problems related to head injuries that need long-term rehab, they can be lifelong. And in kids, if you start a lifelong problem in kids, that can go many years, 30, 40, 50 years and so forth. So it is a major stress on our medical system.
Are the kinds of helmets that you see young people wearing or that come into your trauma unit having worn, when they have worn a helmet and they're still injured, are they sufficient? Are they buying, are they using the right helmet for the bike they own?
I would say no. I think the type, there's a class 3 helmet, and I think the least expensive one that we've kind of found, because we do have a helmet policy here where if kids are riding bikes and so forth, we'll give out helmets from the hospital, but we'll give out like class 2 helmets. Class 3 helmets, I think, start around $80 and then go up from there. And those are the ones that are recognized and used for these e-bikes that go 28 miles an hour.
So, Chris, I see bicyclists, pedal bicyclists, wearing these helmets that have, they look like turtle shells and they have holes all through them and they look like alien turtle shells. They're for bicycles. They are not for bicycles that go 28 miles an hour or faster, correct?
I used to race bicycles. I used to race road bikes. And a lot of times we would do over 28 miles per hour and we would still wear a bicycle helmet.
Is that wise?
Being an older, wiser man, I'd like to think not, maybe. There's got to be a better way.
Well, Dr. Levy, what's your advice on that? I mean, I don't know if you know all the technical ins and outs or the names of these helmets, but what's the difference between the helmet I just referenced and what people should be wearing for a faster, more powerful e-bike?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a cyclist as well and used to not race, but still ride with groups at those speeds. And yes, I did wear just the regular type of helmet that everybody else wore, because most of the times our speeds were in the lower 20s, I would say. But I don't think people are really aware of the class difference in helmets. I think that's something that maybe Chris might know because he's a bicycle shop owner, and I might know because I'm part of at least a medical system. But I don't think the general population know about that.
Chris?
Yeah, I don't think they do either. I also come from a motorcycle background, and if I was personally going to get an e-moped or an e-motorcycle, I would get a motorcycle helmet or like a dirt bike helmet, because I have a friend that has a Suron, and it will do 70 miles per hour up a hill. And at that point, you need some sort of motorcycle gear.
Do you tell people who buy these helmets and these bicycles that?
I have told them. Yeah, people that bring illegal bikes in that are capable of doing 50, 60 miles per hour, I tell them you really should be on a motorcycle helmet or in a motorcycle helmet.
So it's all about education. It's all about regulation, it would seem to me. And it's also about enforcement. And Kimberly, you mentioned earlier that perhaps these rules of the road for bicyclists and e-bike riders are not being enforced because CMPD has their hands full with other things. But that came up at the city council meeting on Monday night, and we'll talk about that and more when we come back in a moment. Kimberly Owens joins us from Charlotte City Council District 6. Chris Dyes owns Charlotte Cycles, and Dr. Mark Levy is a pediatric trauma surgeon at Orlando Health Arnold Palmer Hospital for Children. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about e-bikes, a topic of conversation at Monday's Charlotte City Council Safety Committee, where Councilman Ed Driggs wondered why there isn't more enforcement when it comes to people using e-bikes recklessly.
Driggs. I have a real concern about enforcement. I don't see officers chasing after somebody on an e-bike, and which is too bad because I see people that look like children whizzing around on these things, and It raises in my mind a question of whether we're talking about the safety of the rider or the convenience or safety of pedestrians and nearby people.
So Dr. Mark Levy's with us. He's a pediatric trauma surgeon. How many of the people being injured that you treat are pedestrians or drivers of cars, as opposed to just e-bike riders who've had an accident with an e-bike or e-scooter?
I'd say the majority of what we see are actually the riders themselves, and whether they're they crash for different reasons or are hit by cars. Pedestrians, occasionally we see those because they can be adult pedestrians to go to adult trauma centers. So we might not see that group. And then the drivers of cars, they would also go to our adult trauma center. So really we're just seeing the pediatric population related to it.
Kimberly, one of the concerns is the reckless behavior being engaged in by some, not all, e-bike riders doing wheelies and weaving in and out of traffic on streets and in and out of pedestrians on sidewalks. Is the problem the vehicle or the rider? In other words, can't you be just as reckless on a 10-speed?
No, I think that's true. I mean, I think all of us experienced childhoods where we had access, you know, at various stages of our lives to poor decision making. You know, it's part of childhood. It's just the stress that I hear out of residents in District 6, particularly when school's in session and in areas, you know, around where Myers Park and Selwyn and all those schools are sort of clustered, where at the end of a school day, you'll have a lot of folks just hit the roads. And they're not all making good decisions. They're not all even sophisticated enough to know what good decisions look like. I mean, I'd like to think that somebody knows a wheelie in the middle of an intersection is a bad choice, but I don't know that a lot of these kids know that they're supposed to stop at stoplights. I don't know that they, you know, have a sense for what is expected of them as they share the road.
We had a lot of conversations on this program when the e-bikes and particularly the e-scooters first began to be seen on Charlotte city streets. This is years ago, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And there was much gnashing of teeth about the potential for danger of pedestrians and the danger of particularly the scooter riders. Has that proven to be a valid concern?
Who are you asking? You asking me?
Yeah, because you're the city
council. So I often talk about the 5-block commute that I have between my two offices because I practice law uptown as well. And in that 5 blocks, you know, I will have scooters whizzing past me. And you do somewhat appreciate the fact that they're on the sidewalk, even though it clearly says do not ride on the sidewalk. They don't feel safe on the roads. And I think, again, to the point that was raised by Dr. Levy, I think that we are looking at the potential for some additional thoughtfulness around how we design our roads so that we do have roads that are safe for all commuters and are welcoming to all commuters, but also leave people who are just, you know, old lady pedestrians like me walking on the street who leave us safe to use sidewalks.
Dr. Levy, the city of Orlando, where you live, is also in the midst of a debate, as I understand it, about these vehicles. Where are they in the process? Have they come up with anything that perhaps Charlotte can use as a guideline?
Well, I can tell you about 2 or 3 days ago, Orange County Public Schools banned e-scooters and e-bicycles for riders who do not have learner's permits or driver's license. So that takes away from any kid who's under 15 years old here.
And
now,
we have a listen.
I'm not sure how they're going to enforce that, but that's what they just said for the public schools.
And we have a listener comment from Tina via email who lives in Richmond County. And she says she knows that people here in Richmond County, Kimberly, use these bikes when they have lost their driver's license due to drunk driving. Should there be laws prohibiting this for higher speed bikes? I mean, you're just trading one vehicle for another and you've had your license suspended for driving a motor vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that since, you know, the beginning of strong enforcement of DWI rules decades ago, you know, where people do convert to a moped. You know, there were, I'm sure, you know, jokes made about why somebody was on a moped on the side of the road that they must have, you know, lost their license to DWI. Whether that's true or not, still people need to be able to move through our society and get to and from jobs. So I don't know that I want to demonize that as being, you know, something that needs stronger regulation.
Chris, there are pedal bicycles of all stripes. There are these e-bikes. There are mopeds. There are motorcycles.
Yes.
What's the difference between the fastest e-bike and a moped?
A lot. The mopeds don't normally look like a bicycle. They do have pedals, but the pedals are more or less there for show or to fall into a certain category. And then there's the e-dirt bikes, which some of them are 80 horsepower that can do 100 miles per hour, which is dangerous. Yeah,
I'd say. So this is one area where the General Assembly in North Carolina has actually allowed municipalities to make their own regulations. That is not often the case. Charlotte and other cities and towns in the state have explicit authority to, quote, regulate the use of public streets, sidewalks, alleys, bridges, and other ways, so public of public passage. And e-bikes are defined as vehicles. They are subject to the same rules as motorists. That's all from the state. This sounds like a problem in need of education and enforcement. Kimberly, you appear to have already have all the tools, the city of Charlotte, in your toolkit to regulate this. Am I wrong?
You grace us with a greater degree of power than I think that we feel that we have with respect to particularly some of the licensure issues. So, for example, what I'm hearing Dr. Levy talk about, where you would restrict the bike usage to those with the learner's permit or driver's license, I think there's some gray area there that I'd want to explore to see what sort of, real enforcement, because some of our enforcement levers are limited to civil penalty, and others have a criminal component that affects insurance and driver's license. And I think that we have less ability there.
Mark, since you see this as a pediatric surgeon, what would your recommendation be with regard to who should ride these, who should buy these, how fast they can go, what the regulations surrounding who can ride them and drive them would be? What would your recommendation be?
I mean, this goes across not just e-bikes and so forth. We see kids on ATVs and so forth riding. And you're looking at, like, how can you possibly let a kid this age ride an ATV unsupervised? I kind of think that there's an age around the age of 12 to 13 that kids maybe have a little bit more sense, but they're boys, so boys don't really have that much sense in general. But I think if you can...
That seems to be a lifelong problem.
I know. But if you said, like, because, like, for instance, racing dirt bikes, things like that, it's like mostly it's like 12-year-old kids who do it. And those kids actually wear the full body gear when they're actually racing. Right. And I think that protects them from a lot of injuries. I think there's an age there that can possibly do it. But again, you got to limit what type of e-bike they're riding, because if you're riding one, a 12-year-old is riding one that goes 28 miles an hour, and then they do some manipulation and make it go 50 miles an hour, then you have a real danger on your hand.
Chris, there's often some friction between regulators and business people, but some industries, such as the hemp industry in North Carolina, has actually said they would like some more regulation. How would you be impacted by greater regulation?
I mean, we want to be safe. We want to do whatever keeps people safe. I think it's going forward going to be a combination of education and enforcement. We have to educate the populace. The police officers need to be able to enforce what's going on. And yeah.
Okay. And Kimberly, no decisions were made at Monday's safety committee meeting. What do you hope comes next?
I hope we continue to take input and do what we can to address the three areas that I've spoken of. You know, do we need to have a more holistic approach to our bike lanes? Do those need to be wider? Do they need to have some area that is designated for e-bikes versus, you know, just a regular bike? Do we need to have more protections between that bike lane and the road, so that people don't feel as though they have to go on the sidewalk? I'm very sensitive to the need to work together, particularly with our county, because I feel as though, you know, if we restrict these in a manner on our roads, it just is going to push them to the greenways. And the greenways, quite honestly, are one of the places where I hear the most complaint about the speed that folks are going on the greenway, because you've got babies in strollers, you've got wheelchairs, you've got people convalescing, and that's just not safe for them.
And the greenways are controlled by the county, not the city of
They
Charlotte.
Are. They
so
are.
So we should point that out. I want to thank Dr. Mark Levy for joining us, pediatric trauma surgeon at Orlando Health Arnold Palmer Hospital for Children, and Chris Dyes, cyclist and co-owner of Charlotte Cycles, for being with us this morning. You're welcome to hang around for the rest of this, but I have 5 minutes left, and I want to hit on some of the other things that City Council is dealing with at the moment. And I have Kimberly Owens from District 6 in my clutches, so I have an opportunity to talk about them. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. The deadline for a vote on whether to reverse the city's rejection of the I-77 toll lanes is just around the corner. And on Monday, a council committee suggested hiring a third party to conduct a study on the project or having more community input available to them. I understand that experts who conduct these kinds of studies say there isn't time for an additional study before the deadline. And recently, NCDOT sweetened the deal, or tried to, by offering $300,000 to build grocery stores in food deserts on the west side. So will that make a difference to members of council? And which way do you think the wind is blowing in terms of making a decision on this?
Well, that's a whole lot of tea leaf reading that I don't know that I'm skilled enough to answer. I know how I feel about the issue. You know, I had wanted us to stay at the table. I am always going to be in favor of a negotiated outcome where each of the parties are perhaps a little bit unhappy, but no one is truly as harmed as I think the original plans looked as though certain communities were going to be harmed. As far as the sweetening the deal and offering grocery stores and food deserts, I mean, that's just human need. We should have been doing that and should be doing everything within our power to make those communities feel connected to Charlotte and have the necessary infrastructure and resources to live lives of meaning and a degree of dignity. So I don't see those as sweetening the pot.
The city of Charlotte holds most of the cards on this decision. They're a member of CARTPO, the Charlotte Area Regional Transportation Organization, but they have the most votes on that body. And if they say we're sticking with our decision not to support these toll lanes, there is the risk that you'll have to pay back your portion of the $60 million that has already been spent on this project. I don't know how much money that would be, but it would be a lot. Is the city council and is the city prepared to do that?
I can't speak for whether we're, quote, prepared to do it. I think we're prepared to enforce our rights and to really look with some real intention at what that Sawyer amendment that was placed within the budget, what that effectively does, sort of the who knew what when of how, you know, various expenditures were made. I would expect an accounting. I think you heard that from council members that we really want to unpack that number if in fact we're going to be obligated to pay it back. You know, dating back to 2024, you know, I can appreciate that some monies have been expended, but also there's been some learnings that have been had. That is not all for naught. We have a much greater appreciation now than we did previously of what some of the challenges are of that corridor. But I think that appreciation has given us an opportunity to look maybe at different solutions. And so that's where I would be supportive of a third party assessment that was really digging into what our options are.
The city of Charlotte and other municipalities around the country have been putting moratoria on new data centers. I think we are.
You're hitting all the hits today, Mike.
I am. These are the greatest hits. The hits just keep on coming. We are 58 days into that moratorium, and the first 56 days of that moratorium has been spent researching data centers and convening focus groups to find out what people think. The people doing this presented their findings to the Transportation Committee on Monday. What did they learn, and is it giving council members who wanted more information the information they need to make a decision?
Well, I was one of the council members who definitely wanted more information because I was very sensitive to the interplay of some statutory restrictions on our downzoning ability and what it would do with our UDO that already defined by right locations for these data centers, and I wanted to have some greater appreciation for that. I definitely have come away from that with more understanding of what our limitations may be in terms of some of the existing properties that have already been zoned and are already ready to go forward. I do think that the convening of community input is necessary, but I also think the most important part of that is putting some critical thinking skills on that committee. So if you just have advocates and you just have people who are already absolutely hard fast in their position, I don't know that that's a productive conversation. I think we need people with critical thinking skills.
This may be unfair to ask you, but because I have 30 seconds left, but you are prodding council to update their thinking on making air conditioning mandatory in rental units. It didn't used to be that indoor indoor plumbing or heating in the wintertime was mandatory. It is now. You're saying this is part of an evolution, and perhaps with global warming, we should now consider making air conditioning equally important to the quality of life and therefore mandatory. Talk about that and what kind of response you've gotten. It's like 30 seconds.
I think there's been a lot of energy around this, particularly if you look at what's happened this summer in Europe, where they do not have air conditioning systems and how many heat-related deaths have happened. I think we are much more sensitive to what we call comorbidities. And that was a concept we didn't know necessarily before COVID, but we understand that heat hits people differently. There are folks with asthma. There are folks who are, you know, trying to age in place in their homes who really are not living a sustainable existence during some of these, you know, 100 degree weather days. And so we do need to look at it and look at what, from a health and safety standpoint, is really the best move.
And with that, we have to stop our recitation of the hits because we're out of time. Kimberly Owen, Charlotte City Council, District 6. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you, Mike.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. Our intern is Emmy Berger. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to visit past episodes, or to sign up for the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.